JT once asked me what sociologists had to say about gangs and inner-city poverty. I told him that some sociologists believed in a culture of poverty. That is, poor blacks didn't work because they didn't value employment as highly as other ethnic groups did, and they transmitted this attitude across generations. So you want me to take pride in the job, and you're only paying me minimum wage, JT countered. It don't sound like you think much about the job yourself. His tone was more realistic than defensive. In fact, his rejoinder echoed the very criticisms that some sociologists applied to the culture of poverty view.
Like most professional players, I have a lot of pride. And I have this thing about nobody ever having to carry me off the football field, no matter how badly I might be hurt. I've always wanted to be able to make it to the sidelines on my own. But I was out there on the field, down on my knees in a daze, surrounded by players from the opposing team. And I finally said to somebody standing there, "Hey, fellas, somebody show me what a sideline is." And my friend Eric Davis, who I played with the year before in San Francisco, pointed over to one side and he said, "It's over there, Prime."
A good soup does as much for the spirit as it does for the stomach. Whether it's an Asian-style broth or a thick puree, I can think of no other food that gives us as much comfort. Of all the sections in this book, I found this one to be the most challenging. For me, making soup is a magical alchemy. Cutting up a number of ingredients, adding a pinch of several spices and seasonings, and after heating long enough, the disparate mixture gradually creates a cohesive and very flavorful whole. And despite, or maybe because of, having written an entire book on vegetarian soups, it was not as easy as I thought to come up with soups that can perform this culinary magic with five or fewer ingredients. I locked the doors directed and examined the house. Next to the bench on which the woman sat was a small round table, its legs fully concealed, much like the woman's, by a skirt of lace. The table held a lamp, a transistor radio, a leather change purse with a silver clasp, and a telephone. A thick wooden cane coated with a layer of dust was propped against one side. There was a parlor to my right, lined with bookcases and filled with shabby, claw-footed furniture. In the corner of the parlor, I saw a grand piano with its top down, piled with papers. The piano's bench was missing. It seemed to be the one on which the woman was sitting. Somewhere in the house, a clock chimed seven times.
"You're punctual," the woman proclaimed. "I expect you shall be so with the rent."
"I have a letter, madam." In my jacket pocket was a letter confirming my employment with MIT, which I brought along to prove that I was indeed from Tech. She stared at the letter, then handed it back to me carefully, gripping it with her fingers as if it were a dinner plate heaped with food instead of a sheet of paper.